So as I said a few minutes ago, the style of practice that I'm offering today is a kind of meditation practice that the instructions are identical whether you're sitting in formal practice with your eyes closed on the cushion or whether you're engaged in your daily activities, whether you're cooking or cleaning or sitting at the computer. The instructions don't change. And so this form that we're practicing in today has a slightly different flavor than our sometimes our familiar meditation practices, in which we pick something to pay attention to. And in some of our familiar meditation practices, we choose to direct the attention, for example, to the breath and focus the attention on that. And if you think about how that might work while you're trying to be on the computer, you would have to be splitting your attention to try to keep in touch with the breath and be attending to being on the computer, or cooking or cleaning or whatever else you're doing. So daily life requires us to be aware of what we are doing and how we are doing it. And so this style of practice asks us to do that from the very beginning. Instead of choosing what to pay attention to, we instead explore what is already happening. We explore a more receptive attention, where we are looking at what's already going on. And so instead of choosing what to pay attention to, we explore recognizing what we are aware of and maintaining a kind of a continuity of that awareness. And I'll talk more about that. I want to kind of frame the practice because we can kind of dive into the technique or the logistics of the practice and lose touch with why we're doing this. Now, there's a purpose behind this. There's it's supportive for us to explore this kind of attention to the present moment. First, the first reason why we practice is to awaken to what's actually happening in our lives. The cultivation of mindfulness being, we could define it in a very general way as being aware of what's happening while it's happening in the present moment. And if we are not aware of what's happening in the present moment, not aware of what's happening while it's happening in the present moment, essentially we are missing our lives, because the present moment is the only place anything ever happens. This is where we live our lives. And so essentially one of the purposes is to wake up to our lives, to wake up to what is actually going on. As we do that, we start to see that we struggle a lot in our lives. We are frustrated, we're confused, we're angry, we're irritated, and we also discover that a lot of what's going on in the present moment may be things that we don't like, that we want to change, that we want to fix, that we want to control. And maybe there's some things that we can control a little bit, but there's a lot of what goes on in our lives that is not so much in our control. And we are in a lot of reactivity to that, to the kind of the uncontrollability of the world, the uncontrollability of what's happening. And so we begin to see, as we look at our experience in the present moment, we're not only looking at what we're seeing, what we're hearing, what we're tasting, what we're smelling, you know, just the five physical senses, but we're also, and actually primarily, beginning to watch what's happening in our own minds. The Buddhist psychology talks about six senses, the five usual physical senses, as being sense doors where we receive information. And then the sixth sense door in Buddhist psychology is the sense door of the mind. And the mind not only receives information from these five physical senses, but also receives information from itself. And so the mind creates and recognizes, kind of puts together what's happening into a coherent experience, and also creates and responds to that experience. And so what we call our heart and our mind together, to what we call our heart, the emotional side of things, plus what we call our mind in the West. We seem to separate mind and heart in the West. But what we call heart, often related to our emotional life. What we call mind, often related to what we call our conceptual life, the thoughts, the ideas, that kind of aspect of our mind. In the Buddhist psychology, those are both considered mind. And so in looking at our mind, we are, when I say we're going to be watching our mind today and learning about exploring our minds, we could say we're also going to be watching our hearts today. We're going to be exploring how we are with experience, what's going on there. And so we are exploring not only what we think about and recognize that thoughts are a big constructor of what's going on in our world, but also our emotional landscape and how that influences how we are in the world. And we start to see as we turn our attention to the present moment that there are many ways that our own heart and mind contribute and participate in the ways that we struggle, the ways that we are, suffer in our lives. We start to see that views and beliefs and ideas underlie a lot of our reactivity. And some of those views, beliefs, ideas are unseen. Some of those views and beliefs are actually, when brought into consciousness, we start to see that they are not very rational. And so we are operating based out of a whole host of things that are often below the level of our conscious awareness. Bringing them into conscious awareness, which this practice of being aware of what's happening in the present moment does. It begins to bring things that we have not been habitually, that have been habitually kind of below the surface of awareness, it brings them into conscious awareness. And this is a big part of how this practice actually starts to work. Because as we start to see what's going on, the beliefs, the emotions, the thoughts that are contributing to how we struggle, how we suffer, our system begins to get different information. Our system begins to get different understanding about what might be a way to live. And this cultivates what we call, and I'll use this word a lot today, what we call wisdom. And it's a particular kind of wisdom here in the realm of what I'm talking about today. You know, wisdom is a very broad term, but in this class today, or in this exploration today and in the coming week, the wisdom we're going to be looking at is wisdom about where and how do we suffer, and where and how can that suffering be released. And so the wisdom that the Buddha speaks of is particular to this question of suffering. And he pointed to the possibility from his own experience that we can free ourselves from struggle, from distress, not from unpleasantness. He said unpleasantness is going to happen, but the way we react or respond to that unpleasantness is often with fear, confusion, anger, hatred. And that is optional. And that we can begin to shift through this practice. So that possibility of shifting our orientation to the world, rather than being reactive to unpleasantness or pleasantness, instead, and sometimes in hearing this, people might think or feel that, well, if I don't dislike something or hate something or want to get rid of something or I don't want to do something, then why would I do anything? You know, that might come up as a question, that why would we, if we don't have our usual motivations, which our habitual motivations are often based in our patterns, our habits, our conditioning, that tend to be based in greed or aversion. And if I didn't want something or want to get rid of something, why would I do anything? Well, what begins to happen as we start to explore this present moment is that our hearts begin to open to a whole different set of motivations, not about greed or aversion, but more about love and compassion and wisdom, generosity. These two motivate us. They are, we could say, they are responsive to the world in a skillful way, rather than being in rebellion or reactivity against the world. And so this is why we are practicing, to cultivate this wisdom that helps us to understand how our own minds contribute to our struggles, to our suffering. And so there are different ways to practice, many different tools, different approaches that head in this direction. I would say that what I've just described as being the purpose of practice is true no matter what the meditation technique is. Ultimately, this is the direction we're headed in Buddhist practice anyway, to understand our minds, to cultivate the wisdom that allows our minds to turn in a new direction. This is what all of our practices are about. And so there's many different ways to practice, and today I'll be offering a particular type of practice. This practice is from my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, in Burma. I met him in Burma and learned from him both in Burma and when he came to the United States. And this practice emphasizes really that it's important to understand our heart-mind, to begin to be able to watch, to understand in this moment, what is our heart doing? What is our mind doing? To begin to connect to that, because that is both where our reactivity is born, the habits, the patterns, the conditionings that we tend to habitually follow, and it's also the place where the mind can begin to turn to a new direction towards love and compassion and wisdom instead of fear and confusion and greed, anxiety, distress, anger. So the practice that I'll be offering today will begin with a kind of a receptive awareness. As I said earlier, the a familiar way that many people learn to meditate is by choosing something to pay attention to direct the attention, to pick something to pay attention to. And when we notice we're not paying attention to that, we come back to that experience. That's often our familiar practice. In this practice, instead of cultivating that kind of attention, we are going to explore cultivating recognizing that we are aware and beginning to know that we can stay with awareness no matter what is happening. So essentially, we are going to start by cultivating what I'll call a receptive attention. instead of trying to choose where we're paying attention, we will step back and see if we can receive what is being known, what is already happening in our hearts and minds. It's kind of like instead of being in the driver's seat, we're going to put ourselves in the passenger seat and let our organism, our mind and body, which is not a passive organism, it's already doing things. We do not actually have to try to pay attention. We can pay attention. It's a great thing. We can choose what to pay attention to. It's a very useful thing that a capacity that we have. But if we don't choose to pay attention to something consciously, our system will decide on something to pay attention to. And so this is what we're going to explore, taking ourselves out of the driver's seat and exploring what is being received. What is being received? I'll talk about that more in just a moment. So we're going to be exploring, rather than a directed attention, a receptive attention. To cultivate that, one of the most important tools is relaxation. This is what I really learned from one of the big things I learned from Sayadaw Utejin Nia, that relaxation is a key to meditation practice. I don't actually know how I missed this, because when I now go back and listen to the way teachers teach about and have taught about paying attention to the breath, they don't say grab onto the breath and be very tense about it. They encourage us to be relaxed as we pay attention to the breath. But somehow I missed that piece. And so I really got it when I started practicing with Sayadaw Utejin Nia, partly because he starts there. It's like, we are going to start by relaxing. We'll relax the body. We'll do this in a kind of a systematic way at first when we do a little bit of a guided meditation. We'll relax the body. And as we relax the body, what happens, because there's a very dynamic interchange between the body and the mind, that as the body relaxes, the heart and mind also start to relax. That we can influence our heart and mind by consciously relaxing the body. And so we'll start there. We'll relax the body and then explore what it might mean to relax the heart and mind. So that's the first tool. The second tool is really cultivating this capacity to simply be aware in a receptive way. So this is the factor of mindfulness. When I first learned the practice of being mindful by directing the attention, I conflated or associated being mindful with directing the attention. I thought if I wasn't directing the attention, if I wasn't in charge of where the attention was, it meant I wasn't being mindful. But that's conflating two pieces. There's the attention piece, which is this factor of our minds that can choose what to pay attention to. And there is the knowing what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. These are distinct functions of our mind. And we can see that these are distinct in a way, because just imagine or think about driving a car or riding a bicycle or taking a walk. And I know that every one of us has done that and not been mindful, been lost in thought. And yet some part of our minds is paying attention to what's going on around us, because we're not getting in, maybe sometimes we are getting in an accident. But we tend to be able to navigate not walking into trees or riding our bike, into some other person or moving our car onto the freeway and hitting another car, we are able to navigate that because of this factor of attention. Because some part of our mind is paying attention. And so we can see that we can pay attention. That's our minds can pay attention, and thank goodness for this. Our minds can pay attention even when we're not aware of it. And so attention and mindfulness are different things. Mindfulness is when we wake up to what is happening. And in that waking up, we can choose to direct the attention if we wish. We can choose to where that attention will go. But we don't have to do that. And in fact, in our traditional meditation practice, the instruction, or familiar meditation practice, we might say, if we're paying attention to the breath, directing the attention to the breath, when we lose track of that and the mind wanders off into thought, the moment when we remember, oh, I'm not paying attention to the breath, our first thought is often, well, come back to the breath. That moment when mindfulness, when we recognize we've not been paying attention to the breath, mindfulness is already back. And so in that moment, there's the possibility of recognizing, oh, aware again, or already aware. There's the notion of I need to come back to something, come back, and often we're thinking about coming back to mindfulness, but already mindfulness is there. And so this piece is part of what we're going to be exploring, this recognizing awareness itself, beginning to get familiar with that. And so one of the first things that we can do is recognize that we are aware. Right now, do you know that you're aware? You don't have to know how you know that you're aware. Just, are you aware right now? If you're listening to me, if you're not, you know, drifting off in thought in some way, if you're listening to me speak and you can hear that question, you can answer yes to that question. Yes, I am aware. We may not know how we know we're aware, but we know that we are aware. That's where we can begin. Know that you're aware. Now, this question, you know, we ask this question first, we ask this question, and then we check in, and what are we aware of? Oh, I know I'm aware. And what's here? Right now, what's most obvious for you? Maybe it's the sound of my voice. Or maybe it's seeing. Or maybe it's some contact of your body or some sensation in your body. What's most obvious in this moment? That's another way to frame that question. What's obvious right now? What's obvious? So these are the two kind of basic tools, or two of the basic tools, or three if we include relaxation. Relaxing, checking, am I aware? And what am I aware of? What's obvious? Aware of what? Now, the aware question, sometimes people ask, why bother with that question? If I know, if I can always answer yes to that question, why bother with it? Well, partly because it is such, awareness itself is such a, it's kind of like a pervasive thing that's happening that we often don't consciously recognize. We zip right by it to what we are aware of. And as I said, I'm interested in helping you get familiar with recognizing and being familiar with that experience of what it means to be aware. And as many of you probably recognized, At first, this sense of, well, am I aware? Yeah, I know I'm aware. But what is that experience actually? There's not really a way to put your finger on it. It's not something you can point to. It's not precise. And so it can be a little bit vague. So the question, am I aware, and answering, recognizing, yes, begins to help us to get familiar with that experience of awareness. It kind of begins to seep in to us. If you're outside on a foggy day, you know it's foggy, not just because of the, you know, seeing the fog, but also because kind of how it feels. You could be blindfolded and go outside and know it was foggy because it's like comes in through your pores. You know it just based on the feeling of the atmosphere. And so there's a way that our systems can take in this more broad kind of experience. And awareness is kind of like that. We can recognize it, we can know it, but we can't point to it. Like with the fog, we can't point to, I know it's foggy because of that sensation on my skin. We know it's foggy because of a general atmosphere. So likewise, we begin to recognize awareness in this way. It takes time. At least for me, it definitely took time. Some people may have a natural sense of that experience of being aware. Some people may, that their different minds have different familiar experiences. And for some, that may be very familiar. For me, it was not so familiar, and so I really needed to take some time to understand that. Am I aware? Yep. Okay. And what? Of what? What's obvious? So we cultivate relaxation, we cultivate recognizing awareness and what we're aware of, and how we do this is with a really light touch. The effort that we make, this is another important aspect of this practice, and another way in which I think we often get tight around our practice and lose the relaxation is by engaging our effort in a way that is a little tight or a little bit trying to hold on to experience. So right now, can you notice the sensations of your hands? Can you notice the contact of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench? Can you notice a breath, an in-breath or an out-breath? How hard is that as I name those things? It's usually not too hard for that moment when I name a breath or the contact points of your hands. There it is. That level of effort is not so difficult. What is more challenging is to sustain mindfulness over time. And that's where we tend to over-effort often. That's where we tend to either, you know, over-effort or get lost. So it's kind of this fine balance point of how we make effort to stay with experience in the present moment without either tightening or letting go. So sustaining that attention over time, rather than having the idea of sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to stay mindful for the next half hour. Good luck. We can try to do that, and it can tend to create a kind of a leaning in or a pushing into experience. That tends to be where we get tense in our meditation. Is in doing that kind of, I'm going to stay present, I'm going to stay mindful. Instead, we might explore the possibility of that light touch of what's here right now. Am I aware of what? What's obvious in this moment? How about now? Just enough effort to connect with this experience, this half of breath, this body sensation. this sound, this moment, am I aware of what? Just the lightest touch of effort to be with this moment, and then do it again, and then do it again, and again. And so it doesn't take a lot of effort. It takes a commitment to keep doing that light touch of effort. And again, the commitment piece we might get a little tight about. But we just do the best we can. Just seeing, can I be with this moment and this moment and this moment? A light touch of effort. At the beginning, we need to remind ourselves a lot. And you can use, the reminders can be, it might just be as simple as aware. Am I aware? What's obvious? Or aware of what? Using those kind of questions in the mind to check in. Am I aware? And what's here? Very light questions in the mind. Every little bit, every few seconds. Just, am I aware of what? As we get familiar with this, the questions begin to be not so necessary anymore. There's kind of almost a sense of, it's kind of like a wordless connecting. It's like, almost like nodding to experience. That, and that, and that, and that. So at the beginning, we have to remind ourselves a lot, but then as our practice goes on, there's a kind of a momentum that builds, and we can back off. We don't need to remind ourselves that much. And this is where the art of our meditation kind of comes in. How frequently do we need to remind ourselves to be aware? This kind of continuity or the sustaining of mindfulness over time is what concentration is in this practice. Concentration, essentially, in any form of meditation, concentration builds because mindfulness is continuous. In the more traditional forms of concentration, mindfulness is cultivated on a single object like the breath, and so the continuity of attention is cultivated on the breath. And that is what we often think of as concentration, as the mind kind of lands on one thing and won't leave that. This practice offers a different form of concentration. It's still a form of concentration, but it's more about the stability of the awareness than it is stability of experience. The attention becomes very stable. It's like we are knowing that we are aware, and recognizing there's this flow of human experience. Our flow of our human lived experience is passing through that awareness. But we are not getting lost in thought about it. We are aware here with it. That is also a form of concentration. And it has some very similar feelings to the kind of concentration that is cultivated with one-pointed attention. The mind gets very at ease, kind of a calm in the mind, even if there's a lot of stuff going on. There can be joy and delight that happen, even as there's a flow of changing experience. And so this, the concentration in this practice, and concentration is where we can really start to see what our minds and hearts are doing. As the mindfulness gets more stable, that's where we start to be able to see what's been going on under the surface. The continuity of mindfulness begins to lower the horizon of what we would potentially call our subconscious. We can start to see why our minds are doing what they're doing, what those beliefs are, where we're getting caught. So, relaxing. Am I aware? What am I aware of? With a very light touch, cultivates this continuity of mindfulness. And the mind is going to wander. It absolutely is going to wander. This is just a natural part of any meditation practice that we don't, we can't just decide, I'm going to do this and sit down and have our minds cooperate. There's a lot of habit towards getting caught in particular things, getting caught in habits of mind. And so the moment when you notice, and you will notice, the mind has been wandering, the mind has been lost in thought. And this part, for this particular style of practice, this is a piece that partly the familiarity with being aware, the experience of awareness, is where this this is where we begin to be able to recognize that our minds have come back from wandering, because we are recognizing that awareness is back. It's a little bit harder, especially at first, if you've never done this kind of receptive awareness. It may be a little bit harder to know sometimes whether you are mindful or not, partly because we've associated being mindful with paying attention to something in particular. And so it can be very easy for the mind to kind of drift into something that we have, that we are aware of. It's like in this flow, this stream of human experience that we're cultivating awareness of, very easy for the mind to pick up on something in that flow and just wander out. And at some point we will recognize, we've been wandering. But again, because we don't have some particular kind of object that we are staying with, it may take a little longer for us to recognize, the mind has been wandering. So the familiarity with that moment of mindfulness returning, what the experience of awareness is, will support us in recognizing, I'm back. Mindfulness has returned. In that moment, most important to recognize, first of all, aware again. Remember, there's nothing to come back to. Already aware. You are already aware in that moment. Of what? What's obvious in that moment? Maybe it's a sound that has kind of brought you back into awareness, or a body sensation, or a thought. An emotion is obvious. What is obvious in that moment? That's the first things to notice. Aware again. What's obvious? It's helpful at that point also to check in, because sometimes when the mind has wandered, it wanders into habits. It wanders into what it's familiar with doing. It wanders into confusion or anger or aversion or greed, and possibly into tension. So after you've noticed, aware again, and what's obvious, it can be useful to check in. Has tension crept in here? If so, use that beginning kind of relaxation of body and mind as the place to start. And just if the mind and body are tense as they come back from being lost, if we don't recognize that tension and explore relaxing it, we are likely to bring that tension into how we pay attention. Likely to bring that tension right back into paying attention to this moment's experience. And so recognizing, there's a little bit of tension. All right, let me relax the body again. Relax the mind again. Am I aware of what? Aware of what? if in that moment of the mind returning from wandering, sometimes in that moment of the mind returning from wandering, you can actually recognize and stumble into that the mind and heart have actually relaxed more. You're more relaxed than you were before the mind wandered. I've seen this way more than I would have expected. That sometimes when the mind is wandering, it's actually wandering into a little more calm. And so if we can simply be aware in the moment, oh, aware again, oh, wow, calm, we can use that. We can notice it and simply notice the next thing. If in that moment of the mind returning from wandering, there's confusion, the mind is like, what do I do? How do I do this? First, just recognize, okay, yep, confusion, that's happening. And it's fine at that point to pick something just to kind of remind yourself, right, I'm cultivating mindfulness, just pick some obvious experience. If the mind is kind of whirling, trying to find an obvious experience, just pick something obvious. It might be the breath, it might be the body sensation, just pick something. And then continue with, okay, aware. Of what? Aware of what? So we cultivate relaxation, awareness of what's obvious, with a light touch of effort. And then the last piece that I'll talk about, and we'll stand for a moment after this, is that it's really important, because there's so much that goes on below the surface of our conscious awareness, and that can be influencing how we are paying attention. It's helpful to also check in from time to time. Well, here's what is happening in the present moment. This is what's obvious. This is what's happening moment to moment. And how am I with that? What's my relationship to what's happening? What's my attitude about what's happening? Different framings for that same question. How am I with this? What's the relationship to this? Often the relationship is just below the level of our conscious awareness. But simply checking in, well, how am I with this, can kind of like let the mindfulness just penetrate a little bit more into what's going on under the surface. So how am I with this? Just drop that question in. It's important in that, dropping that question in. How am I with this? What's the attitude or what's the relationship? Not to try to find it or figure it out, or think about it. It's kind of like just dropping a pebble into a pond. So if we think about the horizon of our subconscious as the surface of that pond, dropping a pebble into that pond produces some ripples on that pond. I'll give an opportunity for questions later. So dropping a pebble into that pond gives an opportunity, creates some ripples on the surface of the pond. So similarly, asking the question or dropping in a question, how am I with this? We aren't trying to figure out how we are. We're more seeing, can we feel into the ripples that that question generates? Can we, so we may or may not see anything there. It may be a little bit deeper what's going on. And so dropping that question in, what's here? What's the relationship? Likely to be one of four flavors of relationship. There may be wanting something to happen, an orientation of greed, wanting something to stop happening, a relationship of aversion, a confusion, uncertainty about what's going on, a relationship of delusion, essentially. And the fourth kind of attitude is, this is okay. There's no problem here. That one can be very subtle, because okayness isn't something we're often attuned to either, kind of like awareness. Like we go right by that one. And so this question of what's my relationship creates the opportunity both for us to recognize if there's something kind of pulling us into some kind of reactive relationship to the present moment, but also to recognize, oh, there's actually a relationship of no problem is what's happening. So I didn't particularly want to take questions now, but there was one. So what? I'll take one here. Just okay, something. Okay, great. So what I'd like to do, well, let's stand up for a moment, and then we'll sit back down in about a minute, and we'll start a guided meditation. If you do need to go to the bathroom, that's fine, but we will also be taking a break in about half an hour. Ooh.
You okay?